Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Legacy Leaders Radio.
Well, welcome again, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Perry, Legacy Leader Radio here in Midtown Atlanta, and we're going to have a really good, great, awesome show today. We've got Mark Miller from Chick-fil-A and also a well-known and I consider a best-selling author of some great books. And once again, before we start the show, I'd like to let you know why we do Legacy Leader Radio, and that is we bring greatness alive here on the radio, people in the community around the world in the state who do great things and leave a lasting and positive legacy on people's lives. And there's no greater purpose for our existence than helping other people move forward in their lives and doing great things. And so with that said, one of the reasons why Mark Miller is here today, he's somebody that I have known through a common bond at my church here in Peachtree City, Georgia. And a shout out to all the folks in Peachtree City that are listening today. And, oh, before I go any further, you guys got to keep me on track. Mike's in the house today.
What's going on, man?
I keep forgetting to Brother Mike's in the house today. And all those folks that are listening, thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Mark Miller from Chick-fil-A. Mark, welcome.
Jack, thank you very much. Okay. Delighted to be with you.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I've heard Mark speak. I've met him on a couple of occasions in my private life and also in my professional life. And Mark is the author of several books, and they're life-changing books. And I just finished reviewing and actually reading the last one, The Heart of Leadership. And Mark, instead of me going on about this, tell us your story and tell us about the books, please.
Well, Jack, I sell chicken, and I've been selling chicken for 35 years. Joined Chick-fil-A as a teenager, right, and started in a restaurant. Didn't do particularly well there, but thankfully I was able to land a job at the corporate headquarters. I was the 16th corporate employee, started working in the warehouse in the mailroom.
Okay.
And have had trouble holding down a job ever since. I've worked in five or six different functions, had several career changes, and it's just been a fantastic journey.
What's the fantastic part? Tell me the ahas in there.
Well, there have been many, and that may be a good segue into the books here in just a moment, but I think one of the fantastic portions of the journey is that the organization has allowed me to learn and grow. They've challenged me to learn and grow, and they've given me a variety of opportunities. I don't know that if I turn the clock back that I could have done one thing for 35 years. But the fact that I've had different roles, different responsibilities, again, even different careers. When you move from the warehouse to start the corporate communications function, when you move from corporate communications to start the quality and customer satisfaction function, when you move from there to start, not to start, but to kind of pick up a training and development function, worked in restaurant operations for several years with consultants on our team that served the operators and tried to help them improve their P&L and customer service. So I think that variety for me has been fantastic. And it's created a lot of experience and content that has actually been fuel for some of the books I've had the privilege to work on.
Okay. So now I'm seeing it's the same umbrella, same company, the same great company, Chick-fil-A, but you've had several different positions and jobs. I'm willing to bet. What's the common theme that keeps you successful in each one of those different jobs? It's got to be a common theme or a mission or a legacy there.
Well, again, you might have to ask those who've made those decisions, because I serve at the pleasure of the organization. I've never asked for a job change and I've never turned one down. But if I had to answer the question and was really honest, I think it's hard work. I think it's hustle. I mean, I'm not the guy on the basketball team who's going to score 40, but I'm the guy who's going to get every loose ball. And kind of started my career saying, I'm just going to work hard. And I didn't know any better. That's the way my parents raised me. A quick story on that. I think it actually may be what got the attention of some of the staff early. Again, there weren't many of us. I was number 16. But I was working in the warehouse, working in the mailroom. And Dan Cathy, who is our president today, he's worn many, many hats over the years as well. He came to me and he said, when you get off work this afternoon, can you help me with a project tonight? And I said, well, sir, I'm going to school at night. I was still working to get my degree. And he said, well, what time do you get out of class? And I said, about 10. He said, well, what time could you get back here? And I said, wow. Well, I can get back here by 10:45.
That's hilarious.
And he said, great. Well, I did that a lot because I didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he asked me to help him with a project, and my day's full, my night's full. I'll come back after that.
What made you keep doing it? What made you do that?
Well, again, I felt like that's how I could contribute.
Right.
I mean,
there you go.
I could work hard.
Yeah.
Give yourself some value, right?
I could serve. I mean, it's interesting that that's kind of been a theme, again, through some of the writing. And I didn't certainly have a position of leadership, didn't even aspire for a position of leadership. But what I found over time is the more ways I found to serve and the more ways I found to add value, that opened the doors for additional ways to serve and add value. And I know it doesn't always work that way, but that's been my experience. And so I love to say yes. I love to help. And so I think hustle has been a theme for me.
Where was the aha that said, okay, you know what? I've learned this over these years. I got to do something about this. Somebody needs to know what I know. Where'd that
go? it actually wasn't quite like that. Let me give you the backstory, and this will be a good introduction to that first book. About the year 2000, we entered what I call the modern era of leadership development at Chick-fil-A.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that time, our process might be thought of as more immersion and osmosis. Young and emerging leaders, you better pay attention. Mm-hmm. And that actually worked for me because, again, when you start in an organization with 16 people, Truett was buying our lunch back then just like he does today. So we had a big conference table and we had lunch together. And I got to sit there with Truett Cassie and our executive vice president and other senior leaders. And I was the kid in the warehouse and I was paying attention. And I could learn about leadership. But you get to around 2000 and we began to see some cracks in the system. Again, using the term system very, very loosely. And by that, I mean we had legitimate leadership opportunities. And we looked at our bench and we didn't have any leaders ready.
Ooh, okay.
And we said, we need to accelerate leadership development. Well, we actually had never even been particularly thoughtful or strategic or proactive. And so I was the guy that was asked to lead the team to figure that out. And what we decided is our starting point is we had to have a common language or a common definition, because when we said leadership, everybody nodded and they all thought they knew what we were talking about.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We discovered in our research that there are over 6,000 published definitions of leadership. So it's easy for people to nod and yes, and they could all write down a definition of leadership.
Yeah, I got that.
But we had never forged a consensus. And so if you want to accelerate leadership development, we thought the first place to start is let's agree on what that
means
in our culture.
Sure.
Not for the world, but for us. What does it mean for us?
For your particular needs, absolutely.
And so we did some work around that. And we actually, at the end of the project, it took months and months, in part because we had day jobs. You know, this was kind of an ancillary project for us. But also, it was not our expertise. I mean, we sell chicken. And so we got finished with our work, and I remember it vividly. We had what I would describe as a crisis of confidence. We're sitting there looking at what we had created, and we said, what if this is not right? I mean, we're about to put a stake in the ground and invest untold millions of dollars potentially over the upcoming decades and say, this is what leadership means in this organization. And we just said, how could we grow our confidence that we've done good work here? We had done benchmarking, you know, global benchmarking. We had read a couple hundred books on leadership. We had interviewed internal, external staff, different levels.
Right.
We had done our due diligence, but we just needed our confidence strengthened. And I said, well, I'm going to be with Ken Blanchard. It was the very next day. So coincidence, divine appointment, you can decide. I said, what if we run this by Ken? He knows a whole lot about leadership.
Sure.
Now, for your listeners that may not be familiar with Ken, his most successful work was The One-Minute Manager. Now, he's done 50 books since then. Mm-hmm. But we felt like he would be a legitimate guy to kind of run our ideas past. So I had a single page, simple outline. I was with Ken, and I said, Ken, we've been working on how to accelerate leadership development. We feel like a common language and a good working definition is a great place to start. Take a look at this and let me know if you think it's true. Do you think it's valid? Do you think it'll stand the test of time? And have we missed anything?
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at it, and the first thing out of his mouth was, "This has got to be a book."
Oh,
very gregarious. and I blew him off. I said, "Ken, everything looks like a book to you." He's a friend of mine. Yeah, and I said, "That's why he's written 50, 60, right. 70 books, is everything looks like a book." I said, "We don't want to write a book." I said, "We're just trying to accelerate leadership development." He said, "You don't understand what you've done here." And I said, "Okay, what have we done?" He said, "You were attempting to articulate what great leaders do at Chick-fil-A." He said, "What you've done is you've articulated what great leaders have done throughout history, and it has to be a book." And he persisted, and we, in fact, did co-author a book called The Secret. And I was just saying to Mike before we went on the air, we're very thankful. This is the 10th anniversary. We're going to release a 10th anniversary edition this year. And the book sold over 500,000 copies in 28 languages last time I checked.
Oh, that's great. That's incredible.
And it's not because it's that great a book.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. But it's because it's true. And the book is called The Secret, and the secret is great leaders serve.
Right.
And that's our fundamental point of view. Now, the book outlines some specific strategic ways that leaders serve, but that's the big idea of that book. And so very fortunate to do that. It's gotten traction and globally. So we're very, very excited about that.
And you've written I'm looking at the list right in front of me. One, two, three. I got four lists right here with you and Ken Blanchard for, and originally starting with The Secret. I've got Great Leaders Grow, The Secret of Teams, and the latest book, which I'm reading, actually have read, and The Heart of Leadership.
Yeah, Ken and I did the first two together.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I did the third one and the fourth one on my own.
Okay. I want to talk about, you said serve. So how do great leaders serve? And I'm going to line out a little bit of quick outline, if you could fill in the blanks for me on this, Mark. Okay, great leaders serve. Now, in our mindset, in my experience, and people I've come across, it's difficult for people to get into that mindset that to be a great leader, you have to serve others, because things can get in the way. Pride, ego, a change in view, a change in paradigm, a change in the way I look at the world. I'm the boss. I'm the leader. I'm in charge. I sign the paychecks. You do what I say. How's that working for him, Mark?
Well, we introduced a concept in that first book, and it's a metaphor that's been used in numerous arenas over time, but it's the metaphor of an iceberg. Mm-hmm. And we said, for us, that's our picture of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And about 10% is above the waterline, and about 90% is below. And the 10% above are the skills or behaviors of the leader. And that's what that first book is about.
Mm-hmm.
It's what people learn to do. It's what people observe. It's what you do with your hands.
Right.
The 90% below represents the heart, and that's what the new book is about. I waited 10 years, and there's a backstory behind that, but we waited 10 years to actually tell the rest of the story. I asked Ken if he wanted to do it with me, and we just couldn't work the schedule out.
Okay.
I would have loved to have had him involved with that. So the two books, we think, tell the complete story. And so if your heart's not right, nobody cares about your skills. That's why 90% is about your heart. I mean, you can probably imagine leaders that you know or have known who have the skills that you would choose not to follow.
Oh, yes.
You got to believe in the cause, right?
Yeah. Well, you got to believe in the leader.
I mean, right,
we think
right.
that there's a question of the heart that cannot be ignored. But by the same token, you may know men and women with a tremendous heart who you wouldn't follow, because they have no skills.
No skills to do that.
Think about a doctor or a lawyer. You want them to have skills, but you want them to have character as well.
Yeah.
It's you don't want to choose.
You're touching on something that I've personally experienced and observed myself in my career in the military and also outside the military. I have met a lot of very smart people, and they're very smart on paper, and they got a lot of initials after their last name, but do not possess the character skills. And I'm not insulting anybody listening to me today. This is open radio. they have a lot of initials after their name, very well educated, but don't have the ability to lead others. That can be sad. That could be very, very sad. What would you say to them?
Well, I'd say it's one of two things. Mm-hmm. There are some skills required to lead, and there are many smart people who have not learned those skills, mm-hmm. whether it's the skill of building a team or the skill of resolving conflict or other skills. I mean, yeah. tangible things you must do to lead well. Casting a compelling vision. If you can't cast a compelling vision, that's a skill
right.
deficit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that could be their problem, no matter how many letters are after their name.
Yeah.
But the more probable problem is one of the heart. And well, that's what this new book is about.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And I think I'm kind of honing in on what you're saying here. The skills and the tools, I mean, that all can be taught, right?
Exactly.
But the heart, that's got to be discovered.
Discovered
by
is
the individual.
Good language for it, but it can also be cultivated.
Okay.
And that's part of what this book's about. If it were, I wish you had a good heart, you don't, bye-bye. That'd be no book to write.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what I believe is that although it's very difficult in adults, I mean, the best time to build leadership character into someone is when they're young.
Bingo.
It's actually a process called
the
parenting.
Whole old dog yeah. new trick thing?
Parents are trying to raise successful adults.
Yeah.
And we're
right.
trying to put the character traits, leadership and yeah. otherwise, in them that will serve them the rest of their lives. It's not impossible with adults. It's just harder.
Right. Sure.
But
yeah.
you can if you make a decision and you're willing to follow through on it,
yeah.
you can cultivate a new heart. And that's really what the book's about. It's full of ideas on how to change your heart.
What's the resistance that that we would have at? I noticed when I was reading this young man, Blake.
Yes.
Okay, he's the character in the book, and he goes to visit a friend of his, Deborah, who is his mentor, and she was mentored by Blake's dad. In the story, what I noticed in the theme was they were willing. To make a change. They were willing to explore and make a change. They were willing to look themselves in the mirror to make a change. We have sometimes we are resistant to wanting to make that change. And people may be afraid to look different. And they realize when they look in the mirror, man, I've got to get some help. I've got something I've got to do. I got to do something different because Blake was being... I don't want to get too much away, passed over on a promotion.
Sure. Okay. Well, let me see if I can speak to that.
Come on then.
I think I know where you're going.
Yeah.
The previous book, two books back, Great yeah. Leaders Grow, mm-hmm. was when Blake was coming out of college. Mm-hmm. His dad, who was his hero,
right.
died
right,
on the
right.
first page of the book. I'll go ahead and tell you that.
Okay.
That book is about his discovery. His dad believed he could lead. Blake was not sure. And so Debbie ends up mentoring Blake and helps him with some strategies so that he can learn to lead above mm-hmm. the waterline.
Yeah,
how do you do this? What's required? What is the work of a leader? Okay, so fast forward. This book picks up years later. Blake has been passed over for two promotions.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to figure out why. Well, the discovery that he makes on the journey is that he has learned the skills. But if your heart's not right,
right.
nobody cares about your skills.
Right.
You will be dismissed. They'll be glad to have you on the team as an individual contributor. They're not going to let you be in charge.
They'll give you the reins.
If
right.
they don't yeah. trust yeah. your heart.
Your heart's in it.
If your heart's not right, nobody cares about your skills. So that was his revelation.
Yeah.
And then he goes about the journey of figuring out, can I change my heart? And if I can, what do I need to do?
Okay, now, Mark, what is changing the heart? What does a heart change look like in an individual? Have you seen that when you've mentored? You have a very prestigious and very important position at Chick-fil-A. And I'm sure you have seen people have those aha moments and that change of heart. What does that look like? What gets them? What finally gets them over that hill and go, dang.
Well, it is a journey. I don't even. It's not a moment. I mean, the mm-hmm. decision it can be made in a moment.
Yes.
But we're talking heavy lifting here. We're talking.
Yeah.
We're talking changing. Yeah. Sometimes patterns of behavior, patterns of thinking that have been in place, sometimes for decades.
Yeah.
For decades, and I have seen it work. I've seen it happen. I've also seen individuals where it doesn't happen. And I don't know that I fully understand the difference. I mean, it's an inside-out job. What is that catalyst? Is it being passed over for promotion like it was for Blake? Is it, you know, the death of a mentor? Is it, you know, running into a missed opportunity? Yes. Is it a revelation? I mean,
it has to be different for the person, right? Because everyone's heart, you know, or their inner working is different from everybody else's, right? So getting to that point where they get their heart in the right place, I mean, it's got to take a different trigger.
Sure. It's almost like, why do some people choose to exercise and some don't? Well, maybe they had a heart attack. Maybe they had a bad physical.
Something hasn't been painful.
Maybe they've got a new grandbaby and they realize they want to live long enough to see them graduate college.
They haven't hit rock bottom yet. Right?
I can't speak as much to the catalyst for change, but I can say, in my experience, there is a moment of awareness, a moment when someone says, I need a new heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the hard work starts, but it won't start until somebody says that. Again, not unlike diet or exercise. The deal is diet and exercise is easier than what we're talking about here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. I agree. Because from a male perspective, speaking from my perspective, is a couple of things would get in the way of that. A couple of things that I've seen in my experience gets in the way of that. And I consider myself to be an anger management expert, okay, subject matter expert on anger. And sometimes we men, and I'll speak to the men, is that we are so stubborn and so angry.
It's not true.
And be quiet.
Not true.
And that we get stubborn about, I don't want to change. I don't want. And I find that it's a fear of looking different. It's a fear of wanting to. It's a fear of making a radical change in my life. I may know consciously that if I continue down this path in my life, this is how it's going to end. I know that if I continue this behavior, this is how it's going to end. So how painful does it have to get for me before I go, Mark, I need some help.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And have you seen? I have seen that so often.
Well, here's the message that I've been talking about for years, is progress is always preceded by change.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you just got to decide if you want to make progress in any area.
Yeah, yeah.
Health, fitness, finance, leadership, parenting. I mean, progress is always preceded by change.
Right, and it goes back to that old joke / saying that, you know, what's insanity? It's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, right?
Sure,
so you got to switch it up if you want to go forward.
Yeah. Oh.
And I actually find that that's one of the defining characteristics when you're trying to figure out somebody's leadership quotient or their leadership potential is, are they willing to change? Because it doesn't mean they're a bad person if they don't want to change, but it means don't put them in charge of anything.
Got to pivot, right?
And you've got to ask them that. What has been your experience when people get that feedback? Have you given, first of all, two-part question, have you given that feedback to a leader, a potential leader? And second, what do you get from them when you are forward with them? I'll use Covey language. That is when you use straight talk with the person and ask them, "Are you aware of this? Or do you see this? Here's what I am seeing. What have been your responses?"
Well, it's varied. I mean, again, I've been at this over 3 decades now, so I've had quite a few of those conversations, and the responses vary. Some people will go, thank you very much. And one of my favorite lines that Ken Blanchard taught me was, tell me more. And I love it when somebody says, tell me more.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know that they really, they want that last 10%.
Well, they get that 90% right. That has to happen before they say tell
that's
me more.
That's a character question. Yes.
That's a guy you want to invest in and build to be a leader.
And I've had others just say thank you very much and just, you know, it's as if the conversation never took place.
Yeah, that's sad.
And I've actually seen some leaders who will say they want to change but are unable to, or at the end of the day, unwilling to. Their old behaviors are so ingrained and so prevalent. And those break my heart when somebody says, I want to change, but they can't or they don't.
So what the questions I would ask when I've had people like that is, why are you? What is it Where did you learn to think that way? Where do you think you learned that behavior from? How is it working for you now? How is that behavior helping you in success in your life? And I've had people, I've had a very emotional reactions to that, and you have to do it in a very safe, a safe environment with a person. And then when you get that person and they say, yeah, I do want to make some change. You know what, Jack, I just can't do this anymore. I said, okay, first thing we're going to do is make sure they're in a safe place, get an accountability partner and have a plan, and they can see light at the end of the tunnel. And when you talk about the heart, that resonates with me because I think of radical thinking people. We all know of people that have been radical thinkers. The most, the people who have caused the most change, positive changes, some negative, but mostly positive changes in our lives have all been radical thinking people, people who thought differently, who weren't afraid to look at themselves, who weren't afraid to go out of the status quo. The Steve Jobs, the Martin Luther King, I always say, and I quote Martin Abraham Lincoln, or
Einstein. Fill in the blank.
Yeah, this goes on.
Nelson Mandela. I mean,
Nelson Mandela.
Keep going.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you can go on and on.
Unreasonable people.
They were. Yeah.
Uncooperative.
Yeah, yeah. And because they thought, they chose to think differently and went with their heart, their spirit, and everything they did was service to other people. Service to other people. And look at the changes they made in our world that we are benefiting from now. So I when I bring that analogy to people, I go, so what's stopping you from being a radical thinker and making positive changes? Two-part question. Do you consider yourself, Mark, to be a radical thinker? Okay. And then second part is what resistance have you received with your book?
On any given day, I am a radical thinker. I think when I'm at my best, I'm a radical thinker.
Okay.
It really goes back to some of the work we did on The Secret. We believe one of the ways that great leaders serve is they reinvent continuously,
mm-hmm.
because they know that.
I like that.
What yeah, you know, I think Marshall Goldsmith wrote a book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Yogi Berra.
You know
what Yogi said? You do what you always done. You'll get what you always got. And so pretty good stuff.
That's prophetic, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to this whole change idea. So I'm trying to add maximum value. So I'm always trying to figure out how do we move forward? What changes are necessary now?
Better?
What changes are next? I'm always looking for, trying to discern, and then to bring about the next change, because it doesn't do any good to identify the next change if you don't have the influence and the skills to actually bring it about.
Sure.
And so, when I'm at my best, I think what you would describe as a radical thinker.
Yeah.
When I lose value is when I start thinking like everybody else.
Oh yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. So yeah. I think,
tell me, how do you deal with resistance?
Well, on some days better than others. I think I'm, some would say stubborn.
Okay.
I like to think of myself as focused, single-minded.
Tenacious is a good
tenacious,
word.
Tenacious. Yeah. Good words. But if I believe something is true, if I believe it's valid, if I believe it's right, you're going to have a hard time getting me past that.
Okay.
And I appreciate others' perspective and others' opinions to a point.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I think that's part of what leaders do, is they listen to input, they honor the people who brought that input, but you don't accept all that input.
Oh, yeah.
You can't. You won't get anything done.
Yeah, yeah.
And
sometimes you got to admit you're wrong, and that they're right, they have the better idea, and then you know to go with that, right?
Sure.
That's got to be an important part, too.
I think it is an important part.
Right.
But in the face of resistance, again, I think I'm just, maybe ornery is the best word. I'm ornery enough to hear and try and honor the person,
yes.
But unless you can convince me,
sure,
I'm gonna stay the course.
Stick to your guns, right?
Again, I'm not even assuming that's always the right answer, but that's kind of the way I've dealt with resistance. Part of my role, even though I've changed jobs throughout the business, I think part of what the organization has asked me to do is to try and help see the future. try to help create the future. Well, nobody's been there yet. Yeah. And it's almost always threatening to people who are working in the present. And yeah. So I believe the best leaders expect resistance. I wrote a blog post a couple of years ago called The Happy Trap. And I think the leaders that want everybody to be happy, they should be a wedding planner and not a leader.
I like that.
My concern, yeah, if like everybody's like happy, I'm assuming I'm not leading
yeah,
well.
Yeah. Why do I need you?
I mean, yeah, because yeah. it's always about change, and there's always yeah. somebody who doesn't want to change. And so if you're making progress, you're making changes. If you're yeah. making changes, somebody's probably not happy. I think leaders have to be okay with that. Not that we love
right.
it, not that we're trying to stir it up,
yeah, yeah.
but it's a natural byproduct. It's a natural consequence of leading well.
And only that,
all those leaders you named earlier,
yeah.
how many of them made somebody unhappy?
Oh, my gosh.
I think 100%.
100%. Yeah, yeah. 100% yeah. of effective leaders make people unhappy.
The right choice yeah. isn't always the most popular.
Rarely.
Yeah.
The right choice is rarely the most popular.
But the thing is, in order for you to grow as an effective leader, as a leader from the heart, you have to take that feedback, that negative feedback, and you have to look at it and go, okay, so what is that? What's going on here? And you take that and you don't beat the people up around, you know, the head and shoulders over it. You go, okay, you're doing something, and that's a sign. That's a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to honor the people,
you honor the
regardless
people.
Of whether you agree with their position or not.
Yeah, and so let me take you down a little bit of a different path here. And we talked about this before the show, and leadership and from the heart. But leadership can be defined. Leadership doesn't have to be in a corporate environment, let me say. Leadership, I believe, can be a default in a moment. If you are walking down the street, you're walking through a hospital, if you're walking into a Chick-fil-A store or a restaurant, or you're walking someplace, all of a sudden a situation comes up where all of a sudden you become the leader. You got to make a decision. A mom or a dad. Okay, so it doesn't have to be corporate. It can be in your personal world as well at home. From the heart, as a mom or a dad, talk to me. Tell me how that would look.
Well, I actually think the practices are very similar back to the first book, because yeah. what you're describing are the tangible manifestations, you know, yeah. the act of leadership
yeah.
in those various scenarios and various settings. I think they're the same. You see a preferred future. You see a solution. You see a path. You engage others to move with you toward that direction.
Yeah.
You reinvent what needs to be reinvented along the way. You value results and relationships. You think about your kids. You want them to have good grades. So you value that result, but you also value the relationship.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the same. It's the same set of skills. And then, of course, in the serve model, the last is to embody the values. Well, that's where you get credibility and trust. Mm-hmm. And so I think that happens at home or not. That happens mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. church or school or any other venue where you may attempt to lead. I think our default in those moments that my default or what I strive for is to serve. Now, there are more strategic ways, which some of them I just referenced.
Right.
And then there are just the ways to serve other human beings, because what I believe happens is the more you serve in those non-strategic ways, it softens your heart.
Yeah. yeah.
And prepares you for the more strategic.
Yeah. Physiological effects on the human body when you serve. Do you have any feedback or any insight on that?
You know, I don't have any technical knowledge or expertise, yeah. but
how about yourself?
For myself and many of the men and women that I've talked with about this topic over the years, there is something that we mm-hmm. get from serving. Now, yeah. I don't find that to be my primary motivation. It's much like the runners in the world that talk about this runner's high, which, by the way, when I run, I don't feel that. I'm still waiting on
that. If you see me running, start.
Coughing up a lung or something.
Yeah. But I don't think that's why many of them run. They run for fitness. They run for health. But that's kind of a side benefit, as it's been explained to me. I think the way we feel when we serve is certainly not the motivation, but a tremendous side effect when we realize that we have actually added value to somebody else's life. I get tremendous joy and satisfaction from that.
I like the idea, and I saw a lot of this in my military career, is when I walk away from a command or I walk away from a human being, a soldier, I've left that person better off than they were when I first met them or engaged them, and they're in a better place. And sometimes you don't know you're doing it. It could be a simple act of kindness where they may be having a bad day, and you sense it, and you just pat them on the back. You say, hey, tell me what's going on. How are you doing? Let me know if I can help you with something. It's just a brief moment of interaction, and you walk off. You don't know what's going on in that person's mind, what you've just done, and how you've changed an individual. I believe coming from the heart, and I like to use the analogy, the heart as yourself, your inner self with the heart, is that a person comes from the heart will do those things. They're the person that will tap the person on the back, shake the person's hand. How can I help you? What is I can do for you today? That's coming from the heart.
Well, it depends on what's in your heart.
Okay.
And it's funny that you use that specific example because in the book, one of the leadership character traits that we talk about is the ability to think others first. And Blake admits in the story he has trouble thinking others first because he's usually thinking about himself first.
So
some of the coaching that he gets is, what if you tried to add value to every person you meet?
Now, understanding that's
impossible. But if you're thinking that, if I'm thinking, how can I add value? All of a sudden, it's not about me. So, because what we're looking for is a mind shift, which over time will change the heart. And that will become the default thought pattern. That's actually some of the counsel that Blake received in the book. Maybe it's a pat on the back, maybe it's a kind word, you know, whatever it may be. If you're a person of faith, it might be a prayer for that person, whatever it is. But if you go through life saying, I want to add value to everyone I meet, it will over time change your heart. I love the way Ken Blanchard says it. He said, servant leaders don't think less of themselves, they just think of themselves less often.
I like that.
We need to quote that on the show.
I think
that's one of those paths to change the heart, because what you described won't come from your heart if it's not in there.
Yeah.
Do you have kids?
Yes, I have two boys.
Two boys. What are their ages?
24 and 26.
Okay, so they're right around my wheelhouse then.
There you go.
So raising them, how did you raise leaders, and how does that contrast to how you do it in the workplace?
Great question. I'll address that as it relates to my oldest son. My youngest is disabled, so I tell folks he marches to a different drummer, and we just try to hear the beat. So he's got his own story. We can talk about that another day. With my older son, Justin, I think it started early when my wife and I tried to be intentional about the character traits that we were trying to instill in him.
So, now, which ones in particular were you...
Hard work was one of them.
Sure.
Because, you know, the nut doesn't fall far from the tree.
Work ethic's important. That hustle.
Yeah. Fun. He played 75 different sports, I think, growing up. And before every practice and before every game, if I was there, I said, play hard and have fun. And I said, that's why you're here. Play hard and have fun. And so things of that nature we were trying to instill in him, and we talked about that. We tried to model that. We tried to encourage that. Another thing we did for him, again, I'm going to your question of parallels. I think it's similar. In the workforce, you're trying to help people understand, what are the values that we're trying to inculcate here? What's the culture we're trying to create? I think that's why I'm such a big fan of core values. I think core values add value in many, many ways. I think they're one of the quickest ways to shape a culture is tell people what's important, act like it's important, recognize it when you see those behaviors, and you'll shape a culture pretty quick. So we were trying to do that in our home. Provided him with resources and resource opportunities. Of course, we do that in the marketplace.
Sure.
Gave him opportunities to experience things. We were talking before the show about the time I got to spend with Dr. Covey before he passed away, and he said the quickest way to help somebody develop as a leader is to give them real responsibility. You know, we tried as much as possible to give our older son responsibility, and again, it's not been a perfect process, but
he never is.
He is actually my hero. He runs a nonprofit AIDS organization that he started in Africa.
That's awesome.
So he's 26. He's got 50-plus employees and running 19 clinics in Africa. So I tell people I want to be like him when I grow up.
Well, the formula works.
Well, wow. It did for us, but God was gracious, and you know, we prayed over him his entire life. That we told him success is figuring out what God wants you to do and do that.
Yeah.
And so at least at this season of his life, it's running Care for AIDS, careforaids.org, and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of lives have been changed over the last 5 years. He and a couple of buddies started it when he was in college, and then when they graduated, they went their ways, and he decided that's what he was going to do.
Oh, and that was his calling and mission statement, right?
And so it's been a blast.
I'm sitting here with my mouth open.
That's an accomplishment.
It blows me out of the water.
Yeah.
Congratulations to you.
Yeah,
I think the process is similar, even all the way back to if you think about what you do in the workplace, you try to expose leaders to leaders and expose leaders to experiences and opportunities.
Adversity, right.
Try to do all that. Guide him on, you know, traveled internationally with him as a child. When I had the privilege to spend time with leaders and influential men and women, anytime I could take him, I would take him. Gave him opportunities, had him teaching at age 12. When I was out teaching, I'd bring him up and let him teach part of the content for the day.
Nice.
That's cool
just
stuff.
Trying to do what you'd do if he was a 30, 40-year-old employee. You'd probably try to do all those same things. I didn't know any better than to do it at home like I was trying to do it at work.
It's just how it just was natural to you to do it that way. It wasn't like, hey, that's what I'm doing at work, that's what I'm going to do at home. It was just kind of like, this makes sense. It
made sense to me.
Do you share your message with parents?
I have on occasion.
Yeah. Tell me how that goes.
They're generally appreciative. I think I've never met a parent that didn't have good intentions.
Yeah.
But not, I've met many parents, let me say it like this, who were not thoughtful or planful. That good intentions, but okay, oh, there are some things I want my child or children to learn. Well, what are they?
Yeah.
Have you written them down? What are the 3 to 5 things you want them to leave your home knowing?
Yeah.
That type of intentionality.
Yeah.
What kind of opportunities, what kind of experiences do you want to give your child before they, you know, leave your home? And to be thoughtful about that. So for my wife and I, one of those was international travel. So we planned several trips. We wanted him to see that we don't live in the real world. You know, there are places, whether it be China or Africa or other places, we wanted him to experience when he was younger. And so as I share it with parents, they're appreciative, and many of them say, I need to turn up my level of intentionality. I heard somebody
be deliberate, right?
Be deliberate. I heard Andy Andrews. I don't know if you know Andy.
Oh, yeah.
Heard him speak. He spoke at our event, actually, last week before. And he said something. I don't think I've ever heard it said quite like this, but as it relates to parenting, he said, the objective is not to raise great kids. The objective is to raise great adults.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I thought that was pretty powerful, and I think that's another aha for some parents.
Sure.
I'm trying to get them to be still and be quiet.
That's a nugget for me.
It's like it's not about being still and being quiet. I mean, if they do, that's fine. But when they're 25, that won't be the defining characteristic as to whether or not they're a competent, self-sufficient adult or not. And so I think, again, through God's grace and blind dumb luck, we did some things that worked, but it was somewhat intuitive, and just based on the way I'm wired, my wife is wired, it was easier for us to be thoughtful on some of those things.
So you mentioned that it's much easier to give a child the tools and teach a child to be a leader versus an adult. What are some of those obstacles that an adult has that a child does not?
Well, I think an adult has several obstacles. One is just years of habits, thought patterns, beliefs. Mm-hmm. Those things tend to become ingrained. I think the child is much more open to new options and new possibilities and new scenarios. Another obstacle I think many adults have is they don't have a lot of great role models. And I know that sounds harsh and it sounds terrible, but there's little conversation about leadership character that I'm aware of. Now, I think in the business world, it's talked about a lot when you see it missing. You talk about what's missing.
That's a very good point.
As opposed to who are we trying to recruit to start with?
Yeah.
What are we looking for? And that's actually the genesis for this book. I mentioned earlier that there was 10 years between the first book and the second book.
Mm-hmm.
We wrote the first book because we were trying to give definition to what is it we wanted our leaders to do. And we made the assumption that leadership character was huge and important, but we would just select for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we'll find men and women who have leadership character, and we'll teach them the skills. Well, it was our restaurant operators, many of them, who were trying to build a leadership team in their restaurant. And they said, okay, we got a problem here. When you're selecting an adult for a role, the HR professionals would tell you the best predictor of future performance is past performance. So you're selecting an adult, you can probe for the serve practices.
Right.
But when you're working with a 15 or 16-year-old, he or she may not have had the opportunity to demonstrate those practices, so what do you look for? Well, my first response, the first time I got the question, I said, oh, you got to look below the waterline. They said, well, it's below the waterline.
Yeah, you're talking about a 16.
It's 15, hard.
Yeah.
And they said, what is it we're looking for below the waterline? And so that's when the idea to write a book about leadership character. Because when you talk about character, people immediately think about things such as integrity, responsibility, loyalty,
trust. Courage.
Those are all good things.
Yeah.
But I said, don't you want those in all your people? They said, well, sure. I said, okay, so those aren't the points of difference.
Okay.
What do you want from your leaders beyond the base?
So then what's the next level?
Yeah, or the other facet that differentiates a follower from a leader. And that's what this book's about.
Yeah.
And so operators were saying, we need more clarity on what we're looking for, particularly in young people, that may be an indicator that they're predisposed to learn the skills. And so that's how the whole picture came together over a decade.
I love that. I really do. And my experience with Chick-fil-A and your employees is I've never had, and I mean this sincerely, I've never had a bad experience in a Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, come to think of it, I haven't.
I haven't, seriously. And I haven't had a bad experience in a Chick-fil-A. And rumor has it, you all, Chick-fil-A, has a very thorough and a very very thorough and positive recruiting process for your people. And I think it's being trying to be modeled by other agencies and people. And can you speak to that?
Well, it's actually very rigorous.
Yeah.
Here's the short version of a long story on that. We actually agree with John Maxwell that everything rises and falls on leadership.
Oh, bingo.
In fact, we're big Peter Drucker fans. Mm-hmm. And you may have heard this story. It was in his last or one of his last public appearances. After he finished his remarks, much to the delight of the audience, they opened the floor to Q&A. But nobody was ready. And so it kind of was awkward.
Not with Peter Drucker.
Kind of awkward. And I guess if you had a chance to ask the world's leading authority on anything, a question, you want to ask a thoughtful question. It was as if nobody was ready. Finally, one brave young man stood up and said, Dr. Drucker, what's the most important decision a leader makes? Well, Drucker was so old at the time, he couldn't even stand up. So he's seated in the front of the room. He was about 183 at the time, and he's kind of hunched over. And so when he got the question, he closed his eyes and bowed his head and slumped over a little bit more, and he just sat there. And it was really awkward. They thought he died, actually. They were trying to decide who's going to go up there. Who's going to go poke Dr. Drucker? They said, well, just call 911. So, well, let's be sure if he's really dead before we do this. So finally, they were just about to go up there and poke him, and he began to straighten up, and you could feel it in the room. It's like, he's going to speak. He's going to speak. And here's what he said.
Who does what?
Ooh.
Most important decision a leader makes. Yeah. Who does what?
Wow.
That's pretty profound.
We actually believe him. Yeah, and so we think when we get that right, it solves about 95% of our problems. And we get that wrong, it creates all kind of issues. And so what you've experienced in the restaurants and the process that we use to select those operators is the result of that belief that when we can get the right point leader, a lot of good things happen at the front counter. And when we don't get the right point leader, customers have issues.
How old is the right point leader?
Well, I don't know that it's an age issue. The youngest operator I think we ever selected was probably 19. Now, that was years ago.
Wow.
That was years ago. Truett selected Red Whitten, who's still an operator today. And that was 35 or 40 years ago. And we've got operators, I guess we've got some in their 80s now. So we don't think it's a function of age.
That's awesome.
I love that.
That's so cool.
Well, Truett's today's Truett's birthday.
No kidding.
He's 93 today.
Give him a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mr. Truett.
Yeah. So I don't think it's an age issue.
I think that's fantastic. Several things went through my mind when we did that just a little while ago. Let's talk about the message of leadership and being a good leader with your heart. How would you talk to a room full of politicians right now?
Well, we're working really hard to stay out of social and political
issues. All right. Okay.
Well, as far as being a leader.
No, yeah,
a leader.
I know. I'm just teasing with you.
Because that was a loaded question.
Sorry, boss.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I think the answer for me is we really believe that great leaders serve.
Okay.
Great leaders serve.
Yeah.
You know,
not thinking about themselves, right? It's kind of thinking about putting the constituents first, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about any particular, political group. I'm talking about let's take away the word politician. If you were in a room full of influential national leaders and you come up there to speak and they say, hey, what are we missing?
Let me answer it this way. Yeah. I know you guys are technologically savvy, so I learned just recently about, maybe not you, Jack. But
the internet?
You got it. I knew about the internet like a month ago, so that's not new to me.
Yeah.
I did a tweet chat.
Oh, wow. I've never done a tweet chat, honestly.
Okay.
So I'm learning with you
now. So maybe some in the audience don't know what a tweet chat is. Tweet chat is like having a conversation with a million people at one time. It's actually kind of bizarre, but the way we did it, I don't know if this is normative or not. I've done a couple of these. Is you get someone to host it, and you have a question that is sent to me, and I respond, and then it goes to cyberspace, Twittersville, wherever it goes. And every 5 minutes, they give me another question to respond to that goes out, and then people comment, and they're all coming in. It's kind of really cool.
That is super cool.
This lasts for 1 hour.
Oh,
and so we got to the last question, and remember, you know how it works. It's 140 characters, but I had been coached beforehand. Part of this thing as far as creating buzz is you want people to retweet things. And they said, so you really only have 100 characters. I said, okay. So the last question was, what's the best leadership advice you've ever received? And I'm thinking, in 100 characters, the best leadership advice I've ever received. So if I've got to give a sound bite to your audience, what's my message? It's this. Above all else, guard your heart. For everything you do flows from it.
That sounds biblical to me.
Actually, that's from Proverbs, chapter 4, verse 23. I think it's the best advice I could give any leader. It's the best advice I can give myself.
Yeah.
If your heart's not right, no one cares about your skills. I've seen it throughout my career, talented men and women dismissed from a leadership conversation because others question their heart. You got to guard your heart.
Yeah. That's a good one. I'm almost speechless here, but you know me, I'm never speechless for very long.
No, it'll
that's
pass.
That's a good one. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah,
that's all I got.
No, we got
no.
We got
you got
more.
Some more.
No,
we got some. Tank's not empty. Yeah, we're gonna drain you dry.
Yeah,
here.
we're gonna keep going till the boss turns off the light here. First of all, thank you very much for being here and the great insight that you've given me. And I was on a plane today, and I got back about 3 hours before the show, and I'm feverishly reading, catching up on The Heart of Leadership, and a lot of things in that book struck me, what touched on me was my relationship with my father, and some of the people who have crossed my path, great leaders, and I've served under some great general officers in the military, and I've served under, and I've worked with some people that I wouldn't follow, but so the book was very powerful to me, and I deeply appreciate that. If you have four books currently on the market, is that correct, Mark?
That is correct.
Okay. Which was your favorite one to which one? Come on, you know where I'm going with this. Which one was the
favorite
one
to write? Yeah,
yeah. Which one?
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, he's thinking real hard now. Well,
all right, my dad just told me I have a brother and a sister, and somebody asked him when we were little which of us was his favorite.
the question,
and he said, "Whichever one I'm holding."
Okay, I got it.
It was interesting. I was talking to the publisher about The Heart of Leadership because it's the most recent book, and I said, I don't know. Maybe I felt this way with the others, but I'm really excited. And they said, well, good. You're supposed to be excited about each and every one of them.
Yeah,
if you're not, don't send us the manuscript.
Okay, right.
Because I'm actually excited about the next one. I've got a manuscript.
But wait, there's
first
more.
First draft is finished.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm working on a deadline in the next 60 days to get it to the state that we can publish. It'll be out in the spring of 15.
Would you like to tell us the title?
I'll give you just a little bit about it. The Secret of Teams is about creating teams in an organization, mm-hmm. as the title indicates. Well, this new book is really about creating a high-performance organization. The working title is Chess, Not Checkers.
Ooh. I like that.
Okay, gotcha.
Leading in a complex world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The core idea is that when business is simple, or any entity is small and simple, checkers works just fine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But as complexity rises, you've got to actually change the way you think and the way you behave if you're going to create high performance in a complex world. And so that's kind of the journey we're on at Chick-fil-A. As our restaurants continue to grow in volume and complexity, we're very excited about that. We're very thankful about that.
Mm-hmm.
We spent the last half dozen years trying to help our restaurant operators as they're creating leadership teams. But there are many more people working in that restaurant than sit around that leadership table. And so that's the journey we're on as an organization. And right now that's my favorite one because that's the one I'm writing.
Beautiful. Thank you. All right. Now I'm going to ask, I got two questions to ask before we get close to the end. Oh, my gosh. All right. First of all, where'd the cows come from?
The cows came from our agency, the Richards Group in Dallas, Texas. And I had the privilege to be in one of those early meetings when, in fact, I was on the first visit when we selected the Richards Group, but I was in the meeting when they brought us the idea for the cows. And we kind of looked at each other and we said, we think that's a good one. And, you know, more than a decade later, it has proven to be a good idea.
It may be one of the single most successful advertising campaigns.
We're very thankful.
Awesome.
It has
the billboards are hilarious.
It's gotten legs, actually. We decided we're going to ride it until the cows come home.
Oh my God!
Or milk it for all it's worth.
Yeah.
We're going to stop you there.
Yeah, we got a million of those. Hey, what's your song? What's your anthem?
My anthem. I'm living so that hopefully my anthem will be the most encouraging, uplifting song, you know, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of song that when somebody hears it, they feel better. Not just feel better, but they are better. I believe I'm here to encourage and equip leaders. That's why I'm on this earth. And if I'm successful, that song makes them feel like they can lead at a higher level.
That's beautiful. That's very beautiful. Thank you.
I like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of the show. We've had the awesome, entertaining, and fun guest, Mark Miller from Chick-fil-A, who's got four wonderful books out. Latest book is The Heart of Leadership, and he's got another one coming out. He just announced on the radio today first that he's got one coming out in the next year and a half or so, and we were very honored that he shared that with us. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to give a shout-out before we end today to Tucson, Arizona, to Mom, and also my friends out in Gainesville, Virginia. And my folks down in Peachtree City, thank you very much. Thank you for our loyal guests. Go find a public servant, a police officer, an EMS, or a school teacher, and let them know you appreciate them. Give them a hug, shake their hand, and please go online. Look up greatleadersserve.org, greatleadersserve.org, and you can get in contact with the wonderful Mark Miller from Chick-fil-A. Are we good, Mark?
We're great. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here today. Have a great, great rest of the afternoon and a great weekend. We're out of here.